Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there, scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Hey, man, check it out on antiwar.com today. Dan Sanchez has this great article, Happy 20th, antiwar.com, where he says nice things about Justin and myself and antiwar.com. It's a really nice little piece there. The great Dan Sanchez, our newest regular writer. By the way, I should have mentioned that Sheldon Richman is now a regular columnist at antiwar.com as well, which is very important to me. All right, now on to who should have been our guest on the show yesterday before it exploded, but our first guest on the show today, our good friend Eric Margolies, writing at ericmargolies.com, lourockwell.com, and unz.com, U-N-Z. How are you doing, Eric?
Hello, great Scott. Just fine and ready to roll.
All right, good deal. So you wrote this great thing. Oh, first let me tell him that you wrote... American Raj, that's the most recent one. American Raj, Liberation or Domination. Before that, War at the Top of the World. This guy, you guys all know this guy. He's covered 14 plus wars and all those stupid things, pretty much all of them, that your government did. He was there saying, no, you don't do that. And then they didn't listen. And now here we are. And that could go for, you know, any of the wars we fought at least in the last 15 years. So, the thing of it is, the thing that you're warning them about now is the, not just the situation with Russia, but the media and their coverage of Russia. And this is the thing that's really been bothering me more than the threat of the new Cold War even, is all the lies and deceit and the ridiculous kind of nature of the narrative that's constructed by the U.S. government and their hangers-on. And we've seen a lot of BS in the last 15 years. But to me, it seems this is, you know, second only to the way they buffaloed everybody into Iraq in 2002 and 2003 with the so-called weapons of mass destruction, where this level of unanimity about complete and total nonsense is, it's really something amazing to behold. And especially when we're talking about the most important issue, not even as a matter of opinion, but as a matter of just fact, the most important issue on the face of the earth, the relationship between the U.S. government and the Russian government, both armed to the teeth with H-bombs, still 25 years after the end of the Cold War. And so, and this is what your article is about, is not just the Cold War and this, the terrible increase in tensions between the U.S. and Russia, but the New York Times narrative. How dare they, Eric?
Well, you know, unfortunately, too many people in the U.S. get their source information from either the New York Times or the Washington Post, which is like reading the same publication, or from Fox News. And they're all beating the war drums there. And there are these civilians who have never seen a war, who have no concept of what the nuclear confrontation is like, and yet are saying, well, we're going to go and make the desert glow, and we're going to go carpet bomb them in Syria, and don't dare the Russians put up an airplane or we'll shoot them down. This kind of bellicose nonsense, it was the same kind of stuff we heard in August, or was heard in August 1914, when crowds in Paris and Berlin yelled, you know, Paris yelled, on to Berlin, and in Berlin yelled, on to Paris, and in fact they got a bloodbath. Thank God at least nobody then had nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Is this how it was in the Cold War too, where, okay, look, there is a Soviet Union and it's run by some horrible bastards, but hey, let's not get carried away. You know, that's kind of what this reminds me of, is growing up, what I heard about kind of the McCarthy era narrative, where instead of maybe a couple million former communists in America, millions and millions, and they run the whole government and they're ready to overthrow the Constitution and subjugate us all under the rule of Moscow.
Well, now so-called terrorism has replaced the terrors of communism. But we have a very loud and misinformed commentariat that's driving the news and politics these days. And listening to the Republican candidates for president is horrifying. It's hair-raising. You know, I mentioned in my column about in 1983, the U.S. and Ronald Reagan had been fulminating against Moscow, evil empire and, you know, threat to Western civilization, etc. The Soviets listened to all this baloney, and they became convinced that the U.S. was planning to attack the Soviet Union. And then along came an ill-conceived NATO exercise called Able Archer that was a headquarters exercise, didn't involve troops, but the Soviets misread it, and they believed that the NATO was now gearing up to assault the Soviet Union. The Soviet missile forces went on alert, and then came a report that U.S. missiles were on the way for Russia, and there was up to a couple of Soviet officers in the PVO Strani, the Soviet Air Defense Forces, to make a decision whether to inaugurate a nuclear war or just to dismiss the attack reports. Thank God they had the courage and brains to stand down the alert and say, no, this is a glitch. Because if they hadn't, we would have had nuclear war, and that would have been the end of our poor old planet.
Amazing. You know, I think back on that time, too, where, you know, I was just a little kid and thinking, wow, you know, all this brinksmanship and all the tough guy talk and whatever, this seems pretty dangerous. And I remember my dad reassuring me that, like, yeah, you know, nukes are pretty scary and all that, but nobody on either side wants war. And we got that going for us that, you know, nobody really wants to have this confrontation. They're, you know, they have to coexist. And so that is how it is. But what you're saying is right at that same time, while they didn't want war, they were so reckless, they almost killed us all.
That's right. And back then, the battle lines were very carefully drawn and delineated, and there was a rule that the two power blocks must never clash directly. So they could fight little proxy wars in places like Angola or South Africa or Mozambique, but not in the Fulda Gap in northern Germany. So there was caution, particularly amongst the military men. The Curtis LeMay crowd of bomb maniacs had been retired. There was a sober realization of the dangers. But today, we listen to our Republican candidates beating the war drums and making outrageous statements. And, you know, we don't think how the rest of the world is seeing us. People are really worried that the United States is going deep into some kind of militarist, extreme right-wing trend, and that whoever wins as Republican nominee, if he becomes president, we could be looking really at the worst threat of war we've seen since the Able Archer incident.
Man. You know, again, back to Iraq 02 and 03, half the population of America knew better, right? It was about 50-50 a month or so before the invasion. But virtually none of that 50% that knew better lived in Washington, D.C. There, every genius idiot told each other that, yeah, of course, we all know this is true. We all agree about this, and we all agree about the necessity of this, and we all agree about what the facts are. And even though none of them knew a damn thing that would really say that, yes, they have weapons of mass destruction there, everybody was just kind of going along with what everybody else thinks. And it's kind of impossible that all these people are that wrong, they all thought to themselves. And I'm talking about the cast of MSNBC and every other cable news channel and all the major newspapers and all the, you know, most influential Sunday morning news program hosts and all these kind of people, all completely bought in to the ridiculous consensus that was so easy for just regular lay hippies and or anyone else to debunk at the time. And that's the same thing it seems like here with Russia, where, hey, all the cool kids, all the jocks and cheerleaders all know that it's demonized Russia time, and nobody's even interested in what the facts are. They're only interested in racing to be part of the group that's pushing the fake narrative and making their money and their fame in the process. And now we got to take a break. 1 second, y'all. More with the great Eric Margulies right after this.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com.
Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. See how I timed that there? Pretty bad, huh? Okay, yeah, I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with the great Eric Margulies, and I'm sorry for talking so much, Eric, but I think I'm kind of on to something there with my idea that nobody in D.C. really knows a damn thing about Russia other than what they think they're supposed to believe about them. And I got to say, at least on his face, sounds right that Vladimir Putin is a strong man. And what he would like to do is be even stronger. And so therefore, what America must do is contain him. And so my question for you is just how strong of a man is Vladimir Putin?
Well, he is no doubt he's a strong, a very strong man. He's brought up in the KGB. In their first chief directorate, which is foreign intelligence, he wasn't a thug. He was a sophisticated counterintelligence officer. He's a very hard man, but he has a flair for politics. He's widely admired in Europe by the right, no doubt about it. If Americans knew more, he'd be more admired in the United States too. But he really thinks he's defending Russia from being torn apart by the United States and its allies in Europe. And Putin's popularity is well over 82% in the polls. That's why in my writing I mentioned some idiotic female professor in Columbia who claimed that he's picking a fight with the West to enhance his popularity rating. He doesn't have to. Putin is probably the most popular leader in the Western world.
All right. Well, so what's with all the propaganda? I mean, is he, well, for example, obviously we all know the history. I don't want to be like patronizing the audience. They all know about NATO expansion. They know about the coup in Ukraine in 2014 and all that. But the American spin on that is, yeah, but we have to do that. Otherwise, Putin would conquer the Baltics. He'd conquer Ukraine. He'd march in through the fold of gap and kill us all.
Well, that's right. And President Putin, we don't call him president anymore in the U.S. We just call him by his last name, derogatory.
Yeah, even our president calls him Putin.
I know. It's almost as if they're going to spit after saying and citing the name of the devil. It's absurd, but there is a pro-war party in the U.S. There are a number of pro-war factions that now see Russia as the main threat to American global domination. And certainly Russia is. Russia is a resistor. So is China. And Russia is supporting some small countries like Iran and Syria that won't roll over and play dead when Washington says so. Yes, Russia is considered a threat, but really, I don't think in the top echelons of Washington anyone believes that Russia is about to reinvade Western Europe.
Yeah, or even Eastern Europe.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, to what degree do they know they're lying, or does it even matter? Do they even care what's true when, you know, and this goes back to the Abel Archer thing. I would have thought
that someone in the Reagan administration would have, you know, elbowed and whispered to a Russian official at some point that, like, you know, we're just bullshitting here, selling weapons and making money for our friends and scaring the hell out of people to enhance our own power. And we're not really going to have a nuclear war, guys. We're just playing the game, right? But, geez, they didn't have that kind of understanding, huh? They were just hoping that the Russians understood. And it seems like that's kind of what they're doing now is, you know, the priority is selling Lockheed products to the Pentagon, which makes sense if you're a Lockheed product salesman or if you're a Pentagon Lockheed product procurer. But what about the rest of us and the danger that they're putting us in? Nobody seems to be serving as a check on that.
No, and worse, there are idiots in Washington like Kenneth Pollack, who was, I just saw on TV the other night, sending war great alarms about, oh, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. He was the same fool who was out there in 2003 beating the drums about Iraqi nuclear weapons that are threatening our lives and your little children are going to be vaporized. So, and yet this idiot and similar ones are now dominant in the media. Critics of the war who said this is crazy, there are no weapons of mass destruction, have now been sidelined or marginalized. I speak myself too, from some of the big network TV. And it's the same old story.
You know, I was reading the other day that Putin was promising to help prop up the government in Kabul in the face of the Taliban. And, I wondered if maybe America and Saudi are going to start our thought of what you had said on the show previously. It looks like Saudi sending ISIS to marginalize, to fight the Taliban. And obviously, eventually, the coalition government in Kabul as well. And I wonder if it's really that simple. We're going straight back to the 1980s where Obama's Ronald Reagan starts back in Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan against the Russians again.
Well, you know, I think the I was there in the 80s and with the Mujahideen fighting against the Soviets, and the CIA provided the money and some of the transportation and logistics, but it was the Pakistani Intelligence Service, ISI, that really ran that war, and it should not be compared to what's going on today with ISIS. There is no doubt, as you say, Scott, a temptation to use ISIS or ISIL, whatever they would call them, against the Taliban, because fighting fire with fire, they say. The Afghan puppet government in Kabul that we're backing, like the puppet government in Baghdad, is completely useless, and its armed forces have no loyalty to the government, or they're just mercenaries and they're trying to avoid getting shot, live long enough to get paid. So, yes, there is a temptation to use ISIS, and it fits neatly into this the point that we've been dealing with ISIS with kid gloves, and most of the attacks against them have been political theater designed to impress foreigners. Mm-hmm.
Hey, by the way, I doubt you heard the interview, but did you read Seymour Hersh's new one about the Pentagon sort of secretly helping Assad all this time?
I did, with the greatest of interest. See, I have great respect for Hersh. He's a most credible journalist, and one that we should all look up to. And he can't be bought off or intimidated off. When official Washington lives in terror of Seymour Hersh. But his point was right, that the high-ranking elements of the Pentagon have been passing intelligence information via allies, Germany, Israel, Jordan, et cetera, to the Syrian government because they don't think that the government should be overthrown in Syria. They think the Assad regime is the natural ally of the United States. And God help us if it's overthrown with our help, because Syria will turn into a massive bloodbath.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny the way that he says in there, though, that, well, no, the administration didn't have to know about it. And that's kind of how it works. These bureaucracies really kind of do their own thing. In this case, I think, you know, any sane man would side with the Pentagon. I don't know really about working with Assad, but certainly opposing the effort to overthrow him to the benefit of al-Nusra and or the Islamic State, for crying out loud. You know, I wonder about the infighting inside the administration over that. How does the civilian part of the government respond to insubordination when it's insubordination against treason? You know, what a funny episode.
That's the good question of the German officers who wanted to overthrow Hitler, but they'd sworn a vow to uphold the government. And that is the problem. But, there is the Pentagon. We have to think, the Pentagon is really the fourth branch of government. It's become that way. And in many ways, it conducts its own foreign policy and its own foreign aid program and arms programs and its own intelligence programs through the Defense Intelligence Agency. Mm-hmm. So it's very independent, just the way the Navy was always quite independent, got its own way. And so the Pentagon is doing is right, is disgusted with the Obama White House. And they're not trying to start a war. They're trying to avoid one. And they're put in a very difficult position. They shouldn't be doing it. But on the other hand, it's perhaps a good thing they are.
Yeah, I always like to highlight the irony here, in support of the Pentagon, but just to show how often it really seems to be that it's the generals who tell the politicians, no, we cannot do this, right? Like when it comes to bombing Iran, it was Admiral Fallon in 2007 that said, over my dead body, are we doing this? No way. And Syria 2013, when Obama almost bombed Assad then, it was the Pentagon. It was the chairman, Joint Chiefs of Staff, came out, threw the president right under the bus. I don't know why we got to do this now on TV. And so, there goes support from the military publicly, and of course they steamrolled him into the Afghan surge. So I don't want to like spin too much in their behalf, but when it's the civilians going way off and it's the standing army that's holding them back, I mean, that's really something else.
Well, it is. And I've got great admiration for a lot of our senior officers in the Pentagon. They did the right thing as American patriots or American soldiers. And you have to understand the thinking of the generals there. They are disgusted by these liberal warrior, liberal women like Susan Powers at the UN and Rice in the White House who are formulating this policy about which they know and understand nothing, and they're throwing the lives away of the professional soldiers who have to go and fight in these messes that these airy-headed civilian advisors have created. We saw the same thing back in Vietnam with Robert McNamara and his whiz kids. It's a curse that we have to live with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, at least we've got you to read, so we know what the truth is in the face of the onslaught of propaganda. Y'all, make sure and bookmark uns.com, the great Eric Margulies, and our next guest, Patrick Coburn, writes there as well. Uns.com, UNZ, uns.com, for the great Eric Margulies. This one is called Retro Cold War Guff from the New York Times. Really appreciate it, as always.
Cheers, Scott.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State.
the Cold War origins of the military-industrial complex and the power elite. Maybe you've already bought the War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/ScottHortonShow.